right. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for those who might be joining us online and those who have stuck around from the prior panel. Glad that you can be joining us here today. For this panel, we just heard a panel that discussed sort of the oral arguments and the legal arguments that were made before the Supreme Court in the net choice cases on Monday. This panel will be discussing the practical realities, how these laws and these types of laws may impact platforms, content moderation, and the business models of social media and other companies. By way of introduction, my name is David Ansara. I'm a fellow for free expression and technology here at the Cato Institute, and I'm super happy to be joined here by my two friends. And let me just quickly introduce them, and then we will get into our discussion. To my left, we have Ash Kazarian. She manages and develops policy projects on free expression, content moderation, surveillance reform, and the intersection of constitutional rights and technology at Stand Together. And prior to her role at Stand Together, she was with me, actually, at Meta, where she worked as a content policy manager on content regulation.
Facebook. I'm going to still call it Facebook.
Still going to call it Facebook.
Yeah.
Formerly known as. And then on the far left, we have Nathan Linfors, who is the policy director at Engine Advocacy and Foundation, where he leads the organization's research efforts on AI competition, privacy, and international trade portfolios. Previously, he held other roles at Engine, including managing the organization's network of thousands of startups and advocates. They also have a really cool moderator mayhem game, which I recommend you all check out if you want to look in how difficult it can be to moderate content live, so recommend you check that out. But with that, let's get into our discussion. And I guess I'll start. We just heard this great panel talking about the legalities of what the Texas and the Florida laws. But as a segue to our panel, I wanted to ask both of you, how do you think the court grappled with the practical and technical aspects of content moderation presented in these cases? We heard some interesting questions, my favorite being whether or not notorious Protestants could be kept off of Catholic websites. But there's a variety of them, so I'm curious how you thought the court grappled with those questions.
To quote Justice Sotomayor from 2023, she said, these are not like the nine greatest experts on the internet. And I think, thankfully, they are self-aware, so that's a start. Also, are people hearing an echo? No? Okay, good. You know, we're still all grappling with technology in different ways. But yes, I think the justices are still trying to figure out different features and how they apply and if it's speech or conduct on different little parts, right? There was a moment where, I don't remember which justice said, well, there's no comments on Venmo, and I like screamed out loud, there is! There are comments on Venmo. And they're also like, they're practical things where, you know, they kept talking about Uber. If you think of it, I'm guessing a lot of people have Uber on their phones. There is an image they encourage you to upload your photo. If you upload an image of swastika instead of your photo, I'm pretty sure Uber is going to exercise some content moderation. So there are like a lot of little situations which they obviously didn't get to. But honestly, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Justices were on it.
Yeah. Great question. And let me just start by thanking you and Cato for being here. It's always great to be here, especially when you're serving lunch.
Stick around, yeah.
Yeah, stick around for lunch. There's another panel after us, and then they'll feed you real. I think to Ash's points, you know, it's something of a mixed bag, right? I think there were definite bright spots, right? You had Sotomayor asking about Etsy and how they're going to, you know, curate the service that they want. You also had, a lot of that, you know, expected, perhaps, at least what we thought might be a lot of, and you heard it in the first panel, the core of these cases about content moderation, right? But it was a lot of procedural discussion. And so I think that's good. I'll throw that in the mixed bag. The other thing is you have, Justice Alito just, you know, dismissing what content moderation is as some sort of euphemism for censorship. And obviously that's wrong, but not unexpected. And then one of my favorite, this wasn't to the content moderation aspect necessarily, but rather around transparency and disclosure provisions, but him pointing to the European Digital Services Act and saying, you know, you do it over there. Why can't you do it here? Well, there are lots of relevant differences, and Paul Clement pointed that out. But also, you know, Europe does not have the First Amendment, nor do they, does the DSA on the whole very favorable to speech or companies in those ways. So I'll stop there, but those are my initial takeaways.
Initial thoughts, yeah. And can both of you address how the policies in Texas and Florida would impact social media's content moderation, the core of this issue? And we know that there are some commonalities between these laws, but as the last panel discussed, there are also some differences. So can you describe how these laws would impact just the operations that these businesses are trying to run, the content moderation they're trying to provide?
The true answer is no one knows, right? And we saw that both Solicitor General of Texas and Solicitor General of Florida didn't know themselves. The answer would be there would be a lot of billable hours for a lot of lawyers. A lot of new policy people would be hired by tech companies to try and figure this out. We can guess on the margins. So let's say on Texas, you would want to either sanitize the user experience as much as you want. My pitch that no one loved, especially legal, was that we just stop moderating altogether and we have a disclosure that says you're seeing this because Governor Abbott signed HB 20 into law. Just make it all like one big public forum like they wanted it to really be. But overall, it would be just constantly adjusting, seeing lawsuits come in, adjusting again. And, you know, we've been talking about this a lot. I'm sure everyone in this audience have heard a lot of the sky is falling conversations around the NetShares cases. But the reality would be your user experience will slowly but surely start getting worse. And it would be a sort of twilight zone where you wouldn't know what's happening, but it would be just the walls are going to start closing in and it would just be like less speech and less speech until I guess all is left is puppies.
I was going to say, because you claim the puppies. You claim, because on one hand you have the, free for all, anything goes, but then the other alternative is it's slowly but surely sanitized to puppies and kittens, which itself raises a question about whether that is a viewpoint being pro puppy or pro kitten. So we won't.
America would go to civil war over that question.
Probably would. Ethan, your thoughts?
I have noted down to let Ash go first on this question to say the puppy remark. But I think it's to the question. You heard it laid out by Ash. You heard it laid out in oral argument. These services would become inevitable hogwash very quickly. How are you going to find anything that you want to see? Are you going to continue to engage with a bunch of things, useless spam, what have you? And so these laws are really about the ability of services to, you know, moderate content on their services in the way they see fit. That's, of course, direct conflict with First Amendment precedents, right? Permitting private entities to exercise that editorial discretion.
I would
and what information to present or not, right? So you're allowed to remove the material that might be harmful, unsavory. If you're a kitten-only platform, you can remove puppies or vice versa. And I'm pretty sure there's like a Reddit page like to that exact point. And one example, I think the last panel brought up is like if you don't want to have anti-Semitic speech, then you can't have pro-Semitic speech. You heard that raised it at oral argument. I think for companies, and especially we can get into this in a bit, for ones that aren't the kind of prototypical, I guess they call them classic social media services, the ones that are in the applicability thresholds of these laws, but you set those aside for a second to think about the real practical problems this creates for businesses, because content moderation is how you build a unique business, right? Sotomayor is getting at this with the Etsy point. And I think this is even more true for startups, especially for the startups that we work with. They're trying to carve out a niche because they aren't going to go and create the next Meta, Facebook, YouTube, what have you, they might be able to carve out a space. You know, we're a professional development platform for teachers or something like this, as one example. I think the example we used in our brief was a phishing site doesn't want anything but phishing content. And I really don't know why we use that other than to maybe appeal to some avid fishermen that might be on the court and might be that argument might appeal to. But, you know, in that hypothetical service, let's say, you know, fishers, you know, spelled in the true startup fashion without any vowels, you know, you don't want to show hunting content because your users are only expecting fishing content. And so you're going to take things that users aren't expecting to see and don't want to see off of that site, and these laws would prevent that.
And the Texas Solicitor General also, during oral arguments, said, well, these companies can geofence anything. They can geofence a building, let alone a state, which is in contrast with the provision saying you can't leave Texas. So I wonder if now, let's say, all goes, you know, awry and the law goes into effect. He said we can leave Texas. he said social media companies can leave Texas. Let's just all leave.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to pick up on that, the technical aspect. I know the last panel got at this a bit with a question from the audience, and I know that there's more technologists in here, more qualified technologists than I am, but from speaking to startups that think about geofencing, can you geofence a state? Can you meaningfully exclude users from a state? And they're thinking about this, usually not in speech context, but in where we have other patchworks around, like data privacy, for example, folks... They aren't able to reasonably exclude users, for example, from California. So what they do is they just don't advertise in that state. Well, that, you know, obviously under these laws, you know, the applicability thresholds are so high. Maybe the point gets lost, but I think, you know, if you imagine a world where this passes constitutional muster, a state could pass a law without, you know, any sort of 100 million user threshold, something like this, for these sorts of laws to apply, you can imagine a world where the technical feasibility of a startup, for example, to avoid users from Texas or any other hypothetical state. I don't know that that's there.
Yeah. And to go beyond just the laws at issue in this case, because I think once you see, you know, if these laws were upheld as constitutional, it's not going to stop at just, you know, just Texas and Florida. We're going to see more states throw their hats in the ring for asking social media companies, requiring social media companies to moderate in different fashions because based on their considered judgments. How does this open the sort of the legal floodgates for a new environment, a new world for these social media companies, and how can they go beyond just these laws, but how do they navigate that of just different states requiring, making demands that are often contradictory, and how do they navigate that?
Well, I did say the sky was going to fall, but slowly. If the floodgates are fully open, which I'm really hoping they're not, think of any policy issue you're very passionate about, let's say abortion, right, or gun control, and think of the person on the other side of that. Passing a law saying their speech has to be carried. And we have seen in a post-Dobbs world, actually, some states already, I believe it was South Carolina, they attempted to pass a law that would force platforms to carry, to not carry anything related to abortion as a topic. They didn't pass it, thankfully, but in the world where Florida and Texas are found to be constitutional, let's say. I don't want to manifest that. But if they are, that happens. We have a full balkanization of the internet, and I guess I moved to Canada or something.
True.
Well, they just introduced yesterday in the parliament a C-63, maybe. It's a nice online safety act. So maybe read up on that one first and see if they'll pass it. Make an informed decision. To the question, I think, you know, I hinted that at a little bit of it. I think for us as Engine, like, we don't purport to represent any of the largest companies. Why would we? We work with a network of small startups. Some of them are just, you know, a team of a handful of people. It might only have a few thousand users. So why do we care about this? Well, I think it's exactly as Ash said, right? These laws are about the power of the state to compel a private enterprise, private individual to speak or to host speech that they don't want to. And if that's okay, if that passes constitutional muster, then why would that not, one day apply to a startup? I think for us, and the reason we weighed in, with briefs at the Supreme Court and in the lower courts, was to point this out, they don't apply to startups today, but the constitutional principle here is important. And so I think if you are in a world where this sort of regulation, I think you'd see a lot of startup activity just go away, right? Mm-hmm. And you're left with the sorts of big guys that can figure out or like have the like staying power. You see like the moderation practices of X change, right? And I think that's like a response to all of this, and we can get into that. But you also see like the staying power of the size of the users. Obviously, I don't know what the like user metrics are, but like it's still a site that exists, and we're I don't know a year, 2 years, I don't, time is a flat circle on from that, and that's still around. So, and then the other thing I want to note around regulation and these laws, and I think you heard it come up at oral argument, is like, well, if these laws are found, the injunction is upheld, eventually, found constitutional, what have you, then you won't be able to do any sort of tech regulation ever again. And this is like one of the, like the AELP made this argument in their brief. I think the Solicitor General did like a good job of pushing it back against that and highlighted some of the ways that you might think about tech regulation, outside of like a speech regulation. I don't feel particularly compelled to like repeat all of those because I'm not certain that I agree with or endorse like tech regulation through those methods. But the point is that they exist, right? And they aren't infringing on First Amendment rights.
One of the things that I think both of you have sort of gotten at is that these very laws or the expansion of this principle to other laws would potentially implicate the very sort of speech that is Texas and Florida are trying to protect, whether it's the reduction to puppies and kittens. Well, there goes your conservative speech that you're trying to protect. But furthermore, if you allow this to expand to other states make rules that conservatives won't like. And so the whatever kind of speech you're trying to protect with these laws are actually sort of counterproductive, either by limiting the very speeches because they're trying to avoid liability, or because other states will jump in and the patchwork of regulations will effectively destroy the possibility of these companies being able to provide those services. But speaking of those grievances, people, I'm sure everyone around the room has had a less than positive experience at one point or another with certain social media apps and platforms, but social media apps and platforms change over time. They provide their users with different services. And I was hoping you guys could provide me with some examples about, yes, we don't necessarily need the government to solve for all these grievances because social media companies are responding to users as users want different products. They want different services. What do we see happening in this space where the social media companies are trying to respond to what their consumers are demanding?
I mean, that's a big question. Overall, it depends on the platform, but mm-hmm. I think a very recent example would be X, formerly known as Twitter, with Elon Musk self-proclaiming himself to be a First Amendment absolutist. I don't think he knows what that means, but proclaiming that, right? And then there was a very, it wasn't super explicit, but it was like an inappropriate AI-generated image on Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift being one of the most powerful people in the world, within like 24 hours, Twitter just stopped allowing searches for Taylor Swift until they like figured out how to like adjust that. And that's just kind of reacting to one case. Mm-hmm. We have seen platforms adjust their policies across the world depending on elections going on, right, trying to respond to that. They didn't used to do that. And then everyone got yelled at during 2016, and they thought about it more. They talked to a bunch of academics and civil society and human rights advocates, and they adjusted the screws, the algorithms. So there's always, you know, constant or another bingo that we didn't expect, of a Tide Pod challenge being brought up on during oral arguments. But as far as I know, TikTok has adjusted the algorithms to make sure that when you search for a Tide Pod challenge, you now get people also talking about how maybe don't swallow chemicals. Those are just, you know, kind of anecdotal examples, but overall, platforms not only want to, but that's economically better for them to listen to their customers and adjust and develop as a society develops. And, you know, we as a society have come a long way. There are things now that we find more like widely societally acceptable that we didn't even 20 years ago, and platforms reflect that.
That's a great answer. I think one of the great ironies of like these cases and these laws is like the private sector response in the kind of like aggrieved universe was to create their own platforms, right? So like Truth Social and Truster or whatever, I don't know all of the names of all of the ones. But it's hard to imagine them wanting to comply with a law like this, right? You're going to have to host pro-Biden speech because you want to have anti-Biden speech, for example, right? And so I think one, kind of to your point, highlights that, you know, the freedom of enterprise, freedom of speech on the internet enables folks to create these sorts of services and tailor to those sorts of communities. And also why these laws are antithetical to that.
And I would say, actually, with a startup ecosystem, yeah, they are much more responsive to the societal shifts, right? So if these laws exist, or even attempts, sometimes startups, they don't have the money, they don't have the lawyers, they haven't met a lawyer. They are reshifting the focus of how they're developing their business model and their innovation in general based off of the environment they're in, and they're also responding to what we as a society want, right? What are the needs? Like in 2020 and 2021, during like the most of a lockdown, there are new trends that emerged that affected businesses and business models that didn't exist before. And so startups are even much more nimble, I guess, and responsive to that.
Yeah, and I think there's just like that's a great point, and maybe I want to enhance that and say there's lots of like niche services that don't purport to and probably maybe even don't want to fill or serve large audiences, but want to serve their audience really well. And I think I mentioned it earlier, but like there are a few startups in our network. I think it's like a good comparative example. They're both professional like development communities. One is for teachers and another is for like health professionals. But the types of content that they encounter are different, as you might expect, and the way they approach moderation is different, and the types of things that they moderate, disallow, find unhelpful for their community are different, and so that's one point to be made here. And I just like there are so many examples of startups filling niche roles within kind of the broader, you know, internet speech ecosystem, if you will. I've got we three or four, and not just our hypothetical phishing service, but actual companies, three or four of them we allude to or point to in our brief, but also ones for social activism on college campuses, which is like universe inside of universe. Local events, local reviews, critical thinking, finance, lots more. And so, you know, I think that's what kind of this conversation is all about, right? So these are services that are different based on these other communities, content they host, and importantly, their ability to moderate it.
brings it all the way back to the notorious Protestants. I'll keep being left off the Catholic website, which I said I enjoyed that. I'll ask the audience one more question, the panelists one more question, but I just wanted to encourage the online audience as well that you can submit questions online through the website. So just feel free to enter questions there. And just the last question, I know this panel isn't dealing with the legalities, but I am curious what your overall thoughts were in hearing your arguments. Were you did you think that the justices were amenable to the good arguments? Did you think they were accepting bad arguments, especially with a focus on the sort of technical and practical elements? But just what were your overall takeaways and impressions coming away from this? Are you optimistic? Just your thoughts there.
You go first.
Okay. We'll hit the optimism maybe and then the cynicism. Great question. I think for me, you sum it up into three words. Now, caveat this, think what you want of Justice Kavanaugh, but by the government. This is what it boils down to. And if there's a moment that stands out to me that was useful and hopefully illuminating to not just everyone in the courtroom, but especially the fellow justices on the bench, that's what this is about, right? This is about compelled speech by the government, not what private actors are doing among themselves. And so I think the previous panel weighed it out in a deep dive fashion about where fault lines will probably ultimately end up. I think I, on the whole, agree with that. We'll see what Ash has to say, but I'm optimistic.
I'll start by answering the question about if YouTube was a newspaper, how much it would weigh. I would throw it back to the justice and say, well, if the Federalist, which is online, by the way, if we took the Federalist online and made it a physical piece of paper, how much would it weigh, Your Honor? So having said that, the arguments went worse than I thought they were going to go. Honestly, I thought it was just, I was just saying, it's going to be a clean win, just 9-0. We're in it to win it. The future is here. The Super Bowl, you know, Tom Brady is like going down the line. I guess in that scenario, that's Paul Clement and Ned Joyce. Obviously no one expected the facial challenge things, and we can get into that. But I think what is actually stopping everyone at the goal line is that they are uncomfortable ruling on this, like, as a whole. Like, they seem to be trying to find a line. They went to Solicitor General asking her to give them a line. And they punted fully in the Gonzalez and Tamme last year. And my plea is, I guess, my personal plea, I don't know how much Steve would love this, is stop pushing this down the line. Like, the future is here. We have questions about AI coming down. Like, we're already trying to grapple with the next digital realm, and we need to figure this out. To me, the answer is clear. To them, it's a little more unclear, and maybe it's generational. But we've seen this, if you look at the First Amendment cases, right, with Tornillo and with Hurley, we've seen these analogies applied to new technologies or situations. We're not living in a world where this hasn't happened before. Just because the scale is different and it's not in the physical world shouldn't change the outcome. So overall, I thought the Florida part was a little shaky. Then it got stronger when we got to Texas. But yeah, it wasn't, I was like, some people were around me. I was just walking in circles, stress eating. So it wasn't as clean of a break as I hoped. But I'm still very optimistic. I think it's going to be 5-4 with Justice Brown Jackson writing her own dissent, and then Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch writing the dissent together. That's my prediction. It's on the record. How narrow it's going to be, we'll see. I'm still hoping for somewhat of a wide answer, just because, as we said, like, Uber moderates too. Venmo moderates too. Actually, there's this like great article about this guy in New York who Venmoed his friend saying beers for ISIS and then was banned off of Venmo for a long time. This happens. So Etsy moderates, right? Etsy was the star of a show, of course. my guess is, like, Justice Kagan and Sotomayor just, like, love buying some very, like, nerdy stuff on there, and I fully support that.
Wonderful. We will now go and take questions from our audience and from our online audience. I see several in the audience. So first we'll go here, and then we'll go here. Oh, we can start. We can start there. We can start up there.
Hi, Robert Shredder, international investor. You seem to sidestep the moderator's good question about whether there could be any technical answers provided. And it seems also that the big sensitivity here and the thing driving this state legislation is the lack of parental control. Because the big gorilla in the room and the big money maker for a lot of these online services is still pornography, which seems to be, evolving in a lot of ugly ways. So I think a lot of this could be diffused if there was a better effort to offer parental control. I see some of the services are even advertising that they're moving in that direction. And I wonder if you could comment a little bit more then about, you know, let's try to remove pornography from this discussion and focus back on, you know, free speech.
I did sign a bunch of NDAs when I started working at Facebook and left, but I'm pretty sure I wouldn't violate any of them if I said Facebook doesn't make money off of pornography. Neither does YouTube, maybe Twitter, I don't know about that one. But that's like the wild, wild west of social media platforms. Parental controls do exist. These laws were not, Texas HB 20 and Florida SB 7072 were not driven by parental control concerns. Now, there are other state legislature focuses and bills that are driven by that, and NetChoice is currently challenging that in court pretty successfully. But SB 7072 and Texas HB 20 have a very long legislative history, and both members of the legislature and governors saying that they are passing this for the conservative bias reasons and not parental control reasons. Now, I believe actually Paul Clement did say during one of the parts of the arguments that it would make it much harder for platforms to get rid of bad stuff, harmful content, the lawful but awful content that kids would see if these laws went into effect. Because if these laws went into effect, you would have to moderate less. And that would be terrible because kids still do have access to social media. And I mean, it should be on parents. There can be a completely different all-day forum Cato can have on parental controls. But these laws were not motivated by protecting kids. We have a very clear record on that. I understand your concern for that. Also, should be said, the First Amendment does protect pornography.
The only thing I add to that is maybe we'll be back here in a few years discussing the child safety online,
job
age
security,
verification, and free speech debate, probably also as a result of net choice litigation.
Yeah.
What a pinnacle.
Yeah, and I would note that the if we are not allowed to moderate viewpoint under, for instance, Texas laws, many things that people may find harmful.
Pro bulimia content.
Exactly, like a lot of the content that people are concerned about. You have to allow both sides, and that becomes the challenge. And I think you saw the Texas Solicitor General struggling a little bit, especially with this question regarding specifically on terrorism, but you could apply it to, anemia, bulimia, like all sorts of other child safety type issues as well. We'll go here.
Thanks, David. Steve DelBianco with NetChoice. And a big aspect of content moderation was question two before the court, the notion of whether those laws could force small companies or large companies to explain every moderation decision down to the elements of their community standards that were violated and the notion of having to stand up an appeals process. And from the scale of a large company, and Ash knows this well, that scale is practically impossible. But Nathan, with a small business, the need to be able to explain every decision to anyone who asked and to be able to hold appeals. I was shocked that it didn't come up more during oral arguments, because it is a question before the court. And if we are worried that the court will narrowly enjoin certain activities, would it allow that section of those laws to go into effect? And how will that affect content moderation? Thank you.
Well, maybe I'll start while the gears turn. to the latter point of your question, how will it impact content moderation? Well, think about the incentives that it sets. If you have to explain every decision, but maybe not the decisions that you don't make, well, maybe you'll make fewer decisions. And I think that's part of the point of the law, and maybe you agree with that. And then to your earlier point on like the resources and the practicality of all of this, I think I hinted at this in my first answer, highlighting the European Digital Services Act that has all these sorts of things. And oh, by the way, the services have to pay for it, the appeals process and the arbitration that you might go to if you extend out of that. And we have our own, you know, maybe that's a separate panel we'll do later. But it's also worthwhile highlighting just the sorts of resources that startups and maybe even mid-sized companies put towards moderation. And then like this, you heard it a little bit about, you know, that'll be 100 times more resistant for YouTube. Okay, so what's going to be for a startup? Probably, I don't know if it's going to be even like quantifiable, but thinking about what they do now in terms of moderation, I've got some notes here. Smallest startups, maybe, you know, a few thousand users, don't really encounter a lot of problematic content to begin with, so why would they have a moderation team? Do they really need lots of moderation technologies? Do they need to license stuff to help them do that? Usually not, right? They might be in the product roadmap. They might be getting there. But it's not going to be the entirety of someone's job. But they still want to be able to take down spam. If they're a job posting board, they don't want gobbledygook on there because that diminishes trust. You're not going to say, hey, I'm, you know, Joe Job Seeker, and I'm looking for a job, and you want to, and you're going to post your resume next to ADSDF semicolon? No, that's crazy. And it's probably pretty easy to explain why you take that down. Spam, right? Maybe you can add technical things to make that faster. But in a world absent those requirements, you don't have to explain that. And you shouldn't.
Well, the gears did turn. I would say the other thing I was thinking about, I mean, there's so many unintended consequences we wouldn't even know, because again, both the people who passed the law, who are trying to enforce the law or are defending the law in court, don't know. But one of the kind of knee-jerk reactions would be, so if you look at mid-sized to big social media platforms or platforms that have a social media comment aspect to them, they have community standards, they have, you know, set up teams or at least a few people who navigate those and make sure that there's consistency of application. Consistency, 100% accuracy can never be achieved no matter how much our technology develops or how many people they hire. They can hire a small or a big nation to do all the content moderation, and consistency will never be achieved. And it would lead to those like gotcha lawsuits, right? Of, oh, well, you didn't moderate this guy, but you moderated me. Is it because I have a mustache? You just don't like people with mustaches, which I personally don't. so that would be that like one of those things that I'm guessing no one thought through when they put that in the language of the bills, of the law.
Yeah, the just looking at the sheer amount of content that is posted, and then thinking about even if just a tiny fraction, 1% error, you multiply any massive number by a 1% error, you're going to have a lot of mistakes. And then having to explain, and don't get me wrong, I think social media companies try to and often do provide appeal processes. Meta has set up an oversight board to try to create an additional appeals process. So it's not like some aren't trying, but the sheer amount of content that will be potentially mistaken. And then, yeah, the potential for a lawsuit, well, you took mine wrongfully down because insert my reason here, and now we have the social media companies have to, you know, affirmatively disprove that it was on the basis of a bias or it was because of a viewpoint discrimination. A lot of lawyers will get very rich.
Maybe we just need to slightly switch what we're doing and we'll have some job security.
Should have gone to law school. I think we had a question over here. Oh.
He was just waving.
Okay. A question right here.
Hi, so a question that I've been thinking about, and I want to see if you think is true or not to begin with. I've heard that on a lot of bigger social media platforms that a large percentage of users are actually from like a troll farm or something from another country, and whose goal is basically just to spread misinformation or cause chaos in the U.S. And I want to see if you guys think that's true to begin with, and if it is true, if there's any way to address those specific users.
I wouldn't say, I think the way you worded the question, it was like most of the users on big social media platforms are from a troll farm. Maybe Twitter, X, is getting closer to that proportion. I mean, you would be a better person to answer this question because what you worked on had to do directly with this, so I'm going to stop talking.
Yeah, so I would say that I was looking at the numbers recently, and Facebook does actually report the number of comments removed for spam as opposed to all their other moderation decisions. I want to say it was 1.1 billion pieces of content removed for spam in one of their prior quarters. So there is a lot of spam trying to drive artificial engagement, things like that. There is that kind of content. That being said, I wouldn't say that my team, when I was on the content moderation team at Meta, that was a big issue that we saw. It was a issue, but like I said, a lot of the algorithms, a lot of the models we had, were getting pretty good at removing a lot of spam.
The question was about, I guess, a foreign influence.
Yeah. And foreign influence specifically, I would say, you do see some of that, but I think there's been a good bit of research to say that it hasn't been terribly effective. Like, yes, there are people who are trying to engage campaigns that are, bots that are spreading things. People can do that. But, A, going back to my original question, just in general, we're getting good at taking down, Meta was getting good at taking down artificial, fake, spammy type content, things that were inauthentic in nature. But then in addition, it just wasn't having, I think there's been a research that shows it just not being very effective, even the stuff that wasn't found. So that would be my answer to that. All right. We'll take one more question before we get ready for the next panel.
Should we do a wrap up of what we think was going to happen and how the world is going to end?
Sure. You can give me your final thoughts and then we'll close out the panel, please.
I genuinely think if the decision in both the Texas and Florida NetChoice and CCIA cases goes for the states, it will be the first step in unraveling the last few decades of First Amendment doctrine altogether. And it's going to be a very painful process, and the world is not going to end, but it's slowly going to change, and the way we see speech is going to change. And the difference between the United States and anywhere in Europe is because unlike European countries, we're much more litigious. So we're not just going to turn into France where, they don't get some of this and some of that, but overall they're fine. No. It's going to be much more intense. And then maybe we'll start scaling that back, but it will be a couple of decades long problem and battle that will probably land us in a place that's very different from what we have right now. But I'm hoping it won't happen.
I don't know how to follow that up other than to say, let's hope that doesn't happen. But if you do end up in the world, I do think that the same sorts of concerns that motivated these laws are going to come out much stronger, right? So if you actually, the outcome of these, if the outcome is for the states, that's shrinking First Amendment rights, shrinking free speech or free press. And that's not a good thing. And as twisted around backwards and confused that the folks that say they're for free speech that are for these laws are, maybe one day they'll come to realize that far too late after the walls have closed in. And again, we end up in an unfamiliar world.
I think it's a good place to end it. And can you join me in thanking our panelists? And thank you for coming.